We're beginning the book of Habakkuk, and the book of Habakkuk again is a book where we are not told what family he's from, what city he's from, what generation he lived in. And again, we have a tradition that he prophesied in the same generation as his predecessor Nahum, same generation of the wicked king Menashe, and that the Navi doesn't make mention of it because of Menashe's wickedness. The Navi is not attributed to that Judean king. The prophecy of Habakkuk was divided by the Christians into three chapters, and we too, we view the book of Habakkuk as having three sections. This time they got it right. His claims against God, how come the wicked are so successful, how come Nebuchadnezzar has it good, and how come the Jews are suffering at his hands, and God's answer and his apology for having spoken that way. We have on tradition that Habakkuk drew a circle in the sand, entered the circle, and said, I'm not leaving until you answer me, God. And he's not the first to do that. We have a tradition that says that Moshe Rabbeinu did that. When his sister Miriam was ill, he drew a circle in the sand and stood in prayer that she be healed, and also indicated that he's staying in that circle till he gets what he wanted. Now, on the surface, that sounds a little bit chutzpahdeh. A little bit disrespectful. Obviously, there's a Kabbalistic concept going on here with the circle in the sand, like Choni and Me'agel did. We all know the story of Choni, who drew the circle in the sand and said, God, I'm not leaving until the rain comes down. But obviously, if Moshe did it, and Habakkuk did it, and Choni and Me'agel did it, there's something to be said for the circle in the sand. Yeah. They needed rain. They needed rain. They came to him, and they told him how dire their need for rain was, and he drew a circle. The messengers from the rabbis. And Choni drew a circle in the sand and said, God, I'm not leaving until you give them rain. And then started raining, and he said, no, this is too light rain. And then rain started pouring, and he said, no, this is too harsh rain. Your people need it just right, and then it rained. So that's the story in a nutshell. But our story about Habakkuk, the commentaries describe Habakkuk as being the shorthand version of the book of Job. Meaning they're both going to contend with the same question. How come the wicked are successful? How come the righteous suffer? So the Navi begins, Hamasa Asher Chazah Habakkuk HaNavi. The elevation, the vision that Habakkuk the prophet saw. Ad ana Adonai shivati velo tishma. Till when Habakkuk calls out to Hashem? Till when will I call out and you seemingly don't listen? The Babylonian Empire is in tranquility. I plead before you about their wicked ways, and it seems that you're not listening. Ezak elecha Hamas velo toshia. I call before you over the way they're plundering us, they're treating us unfairly, and you do not save us. Lama tereini aven ve'amal tabit v'shod v'chamas le'negdi. The Navi says, how come I see in prophecy, I see how they're going to plunder my people? How come I see that I see the sins of my people? And you, Hashem, you also, obviously, you know what you're showing me. I see how the enemy is going to come and destroy the people of Israel. And you who know all of this, you allowed me to see all of this. How come? How come you let me see the suffering of my people, the suffering that's yet to come? And I know that the Babylonian Empire is going to come and destroy. And why do I have to suffer and know all of this? How come I see this wicked one? Why is he entitled to destroy my people? The Amal Tabit, and you, Hashem, you look on as people are being hurt and you don't get involved. How come you allowed me to see into the future and see Nebuchadnezzar erect an idol in the Holy of Holies? How come you allow me to see Nebuchadnezzar erect his idol and say that whoever doesn't bow to it will be thrown into the furnace? How come you show me the future? You show me how this wicked one will hurt my people. And you look on as all of this happens and you don't get involved. Vishod v'chamas d'negdi, and I see how they plunder. I see how they will steal from my people. Vayehi riv umadon yisa. And I see this one who's going to be the perpetrator of all this, and I see him continuously successful. How come? Al kein tafug Torah velo yetzei lanetzach mishpat. When the Jews will see how Nebuchadnezzar is continuously successful, and it seems as though there's no stopping him. Al ken, therefore, tafug Torah. It's as though the Torah will be weakened in the hands of the Jewish people, and they will step forward and bow. Nebuchadnezzar will say, whoever doesn't bow is going to get killed, and the Jews all bow. We know Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah didn't bow, but they were the only exception. The rest of the Jewish people did bow. And Habakkuk attributes that to God's silence. He says the reason they were pushed and they conceded, the reason they agreed to bow was because you didn't get involved. They didn't see you controlling the world. They saw that Nebuchadnezzar was getting away with everything he was doing. Al ken, therefore, tafug Torah, the Torah is weakened. Velo yetzei lanetzach mishpat, and justice doesn't come out. The eternal truth of the Torah does not shine. Ki rasha machtir et hatzadik. Because the wicked surround the righteous. Al ken yetzei mishpat meukal. Nebuchadnezzar surrounds the Jewish people. He places a siege around the Jewish people. He burns the temple. And that's why the Jewish people also figure that their calculations are in error. But the truth is that they look on and they seem to think that your justice is not complete. The fact that you don't get involved, says Habakkuk, gives people the feeling that there is no judge. And if there is no judge, and there is no judgment day, so then people have no reason to be faithful to the Torah. I'm with you.
I heard somebody once say that having faith in Hashem, faith in God, like, can't begin until at least at some point. Like, you get angry with him. Like, because if you get angry with people, it's like you believe that people are in charge of the world. And it seems like Habakkuk, I mean, like, I'm reading this and it seems like it's really harsh things that he's saying to God. But, I mean, what if is it better that he's doing this than that he's blaming Nebuchadnezzar? I mean, I don't know, this is a little bit off topic, but I think it's kind of related. Like, what do you think about that? And it states to your faith in God that at some point maybe you should be angry with him, because if you're angry with him, that means you recognize that he controls everything. And obviously you should move beyond that and recognize that he does everything for good and he understands. But you see, like, Eov, and you see Habakkuk, and I'm guessing they're both Sadiqim, and they both really question God and were kind of, seems almost angry how he was running the world. But it's because they saw that he was running the world.
When Moshe Rabbeinu turns to Hashem and says, "Lama arot alam azeh? Why have you hurt this people?" So Hashem holds it against him. When Eov calls out against Hashem, so Hashem holds it against him. And when Habakkuk will finish his speech against Hashem, Hashem will hold it against him. And in Hashem's response to Eov, we saw just this week, it's the latest class in Eov, I think, the beginning of the 38th chapter. Rashi quotes a medrash that Hashem said to Eov, "You've darkened my plan. I had great things planned for you, and you've destroyed your future." And Eov says, well, if I would have known what you were planning, if I would have understood the big picture, I would have never spoken this way. And God says, well, Avram didn't understand the big picture either, and he didn't talk this way. And that's the end of the conversation. Now, I'm wondering how much we should expand here, because really this is the place to expand. I want to share with you a thought I have, which I haven't yet proven clearly from the sources, but I think it's a true thought, and I'm still working on the different angles. I think the thought is true, but the semantics that I'm going to apply, I still have to verify if I'm correct. The Torah discusses the Yadata Yom. I want you to know today, Hashem tells us. No, not believe. Ki Hashem Elokim, Hashem runs the show. So that means that the concept of Hashem running the show, you're supposed to reach a point of knowledge, not belief. It's not faith. You're supposed to verify it, clarify it, understand it. The Rambam says, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, the first of the commandments, is a commandment to know that Hashem is running the world. The Pasuk says in Vayeschanan, Ata Hor'eta, you were shown the miracles of the Exodus from Egypt and Sinai, Ladat, so that you know Ki Hashem Elokim, that God is the one running the show, and Od Milvadot are none other than Him. So, we see that there's a concept of knowing that Hashem runs the world. It's not about faith, it's about knowing. So far, so good? So where does Emunah come into the picture? So there's a classical answer that's often given in Machon Meir and Merkaz Rab, which is not the answer I'm going to give you now. Ordinarily, a person can analyze and verify and clarify to himself. And this goes in cycles, meaning you're never done with this clarification process. It's something which you can go deeper and deeper on. But a person can clarify that God created the world and is running the world, that He has chosen people, that He gave us the Torah. There are certain things where a person can attain a certain level of clarity. And then a person is faced with the challenge of how do I reconcile that with what I see on this earth? You start with the beginning of time. Cain kills Abel. What did Abel do? You know, the commentaries ask on Hillel's statement in Pirkei Avos. Hillel says he sees a body floating and he tells the body, "Al de'atev tatfu." It's because you drowned others that you were drowned. So the commentaries right away ask, wait a second, what are you going to say about Cain and Abel? Hevel didn't kill anyone, so why did he get killed? So it doesn't seem to be a perfect formula, unless you have to know how to apply the formula, right? But you can't say anyone that gets killed, it's because he killed someone else. You see, the first murder wasn't like that. So most often when we are challenged with our understanding of God, the way Habakkuk is upset, our challenge is that God does not fit what we think is right. Meaning we have a perception, we have a thought of the way the world should be, and God doesn't match up to that. So then we have a question. But let's take a harsher question. The harshest question you could have is a situation where God tells you one way and then God seemingly contradicts himself. Avraham Avinu, right? God tells Avraham, Yitzchak is your future. And then God tells him, go slaughter him. So now, let's meet up with Avraham Avinu the day after God tells him to slaughter his son. He's en route, right? He gets up early in the morning and he's going. He asks Avraham Avinu, did God create the world? Yes. Is God truthful? Yes. Did God tell you Yitzchak is your future? Yes. Did God tell you to slaughter him? Yes. Do you know all of this? Yes. Don't you have a contradiction? Yes. Ah, so you have a contradiction. So how do you reconcile that contradiction? What's Avraham going to tell you? I think Avraham's answer would be, I don't know. I think that's where we start talking about emunah. Meaning, yidiyah, I can attain a knowledge of basic concepts and verify that they're true. And then I start contrasting the concepts that I verified with the real world. And suddenly in the real world, I have a lot of questions. And that's where I think we start talking about emunah. If you analyze the word emunah, where do we find the word emunah? V'heimin b'Hashem. Hashem tells him, you're going to have a son. Hashem tells him, don't worry, Yishmael isn't your future. When do we find emunah? It says emunah is lagid baboker chastecha v'emunatcha b'leilot. In the daylight when everything's shining, so then I could declare what I see. Look at now, God's doing everything good for me. But b'leilot, at the night time, which our sages say is a reference to the galut. It's the period when there's persecution. What Habakkuk is witnessing in his prophecy. People are suffering. So then what are you going to say? That's when you start talking about emunah. We find that if you're working for someone all day and he tells you he's going to pay you at night, do you know he's going to pay you at night? You don't know. You believe he's going to pay you at night. You're working all day with the belief that at then he's going to pay you. That's emunah. Emunah is the belief that after I verified, I know he's created the world, I know he's running the world, I know he gave us the Torah, I know I'm doing what's right, but I still don't understand, because why is A or B or C the case in the world? That's when we start talking about emunah. Emunah is where I don't have answers. I have a situation that puts into question everything else I verify. And I'm going to have many situations like that in my lifetime. So when I face those situations, that's when we start talking about emunah. Ne'emanu bal nachtecha sheyishalem nechascha upulatecha, our sages say. He's trusted that he's going to pay you correctly. He's trusted. It's emunah. Notice the term emunah. So I'm saying again, I don't feel like, you know, putting all these sources together, I'm coming up with a thought that's my own. I haven't seen anyone word it the way I'm wording it here. That this is the yediyah and this is the emunah. But I'm quoting to the Rashi on emunatcha b'leilot. Going to the Ne'manu Bal Nachta. I'm giving you the different sources that lead me to believe that this is a correct understanding in the balance between Yediyah and Emunah. I know that classically people give another explanation. But I think that based on many sources, I'm naming a few, I think this is an outlook that is correct.
So Eov and Habakkuk and Moshe Rabbeinu, it wasn't, they knew that God was running the world. Yeah, a lack of their
emunah, right?
Because they saw a situation that they didn't think was right, and they didn't know how to reconcile that with what they knew about God, and so they thought God was doing something wrong.
On their level, there was a point of questioning, and the truth is, even in the story of Moshe Rabbeinu, you see it. Moshe Rabbeinu says, "I'm going to tell them God will take them out of Mitzrayim. Vehem lo yaminu li." They won't believe me. What's he talking about? He's talking about something in the future. I'm telling them it's going to be better. God is going to make good. That's emunah. Vayaminam, God says to them, Hem aminim b'nei maminim. They're believers, the sons of believers. What does that mean? You see, they verified. They did need signs. They did need clarification. They did take him to task and go to Sarach Bas Asher and verify if he has the signs they have on tradition that he's going to be the Redeemer. They didn't just take his word for it. The answer is, I think, according to what we're saying now, a totally different concept. They're still enslaved. He's telling them, God's been watching over you all this time. Do they have answers as to why they are suffering like this? Do they have answers as to how this is all going to work? No. Ask them, how are you leaving Mitzrayim? They don't have answers. That's the emunah. Hem maminim b'nei maminim v'ata, but you Hashem says, en sofcha la'amin. You're going to see you're not the ma'amin that you should be. And that comes into play, firstly, when Moshe Rabbeinu says, L'marot alam hazeh, why have you harmed this nation? The day after he goes to Pharaoh, everyone's suffering worse. So he turns to God and says, why? Why'd you send me? And Chazal said, that was a point of emunah. Chazal also said about hitting the rock, so that deserves its own word.
So
I don't know that I would agree and say that a person has to go through the stage of being angry at God. I think it's natural for a person to go through that stage. I think it's normal. But I also think that part of what we're learning here is that the greatness of a person is measured in his capacity to realize that there are things beyond his understanding and to be able to stick to his guns, to stand for the things that he's verified are true. Remember, this isn't the emunah. This is the yediyah. Once he's verified certain points, then the fact that those points are challenged and he doesn't know how to reconcile them with other areas, that's where I think we're talking about emunah, and that's something which needs to be built. It's not easy. We're taught that it's in our DNA. which also is a concept that could be developed, because Chazal tell us that that's part of the nature of a Jew, that when things go bad, he doesn't do like the Goyim do on Sukkot, they kick the Sukkah, or a guy that the Gemara says, if a guy says, I will give this much tzedakah so that my son gets healed. And then the Gemara says, if a Jew does that, that's a great guy. If a guy does that, that's terrible. Gemara says, what's the difference? Gemara says, because when the guy's son is not healed, so the Jew will realize, I didn't live up to my thing, he can accept that. That's the emunah. But the guy says, wait a second, God, if you're running the world, didn't I tell you I'll give charity? Don't you want my charity? How come my kid didn't get better? That's because there's no emunah there. Chazal tell us that when Shlomo builds the Beit HaMikdash, he says to Hashem, when the non-Jews pray to this place, give them whatever they ask for, because otherwise they won't believe in you. When the Jews pray to this place, give it to them if they deserve it. If not, no. Why? Because that's the difference. That's the ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim. You could develop this thought into the Jewish guilt, into the fact that Jews are always blaming themselves, which we're not viewing as necessarily a bad thing, because it's partially a true perspective on the world. But I'm just saying, you see that this idea could be taken, can be branched out and encompassed in many areas. But back to Habakkuk.
Thanks.
Say there.
Yeah, sure. Very nice.
But that needs a lot of thought. Meaning, we discussed now. What I'm telling you now is something that's been churning in my head for months. Meaning, it's not. You got to think about what we just said. It's a very delicate balance, and if you think about it, it also makes all of emunah into something that's far more palatable and logical. Meaning, people very often talk about emunah as something that, like, believe in something you don't understand. Why should I? Then I could be Christian or Muslim or anything else. Where do you get that from? Why? Because I was born Jewish, I'm supposed to believe in this?
You're saying instead there's something you understand, like something you know, you verify.
I'm saying that's what the Torah says.
But then you have trust in the situation where you don't understand,
though. Right.
But you have a foundation of understanding.
Right.
That's
right. Okay. There's that the core yediyah that has to be there. And that's the mitzvah. If you look at the mitzvah and the Rambam, if you look in the halacha, there's a mitzvah to know. It doesn't say to believe. The Rambam says the mitzvah is to know that Hashem created the world, to understand. There's a mitzvah. Look at the Torah. Torah doesn't say lehamin. Torah says ladat ki ani Hashem ekadishchem. I want you to know. So we have a responsibility to know. It's a very big difference. Okay, back to the Navi. So the Navi turns to Hashem and says, people think that you don't run the world, that your justice is not a complete justice. He's saying what it takes Eov 38 chapters to say. He's saying in one line. Saying, you know, if you're going to let them get away with this, and you are, if you're showing me that the Jews are going to suffer so terribly at the hands of the wicked, so, yetzeh mishpat meukal. What comes out is people say that your justice is not honest, is not fair. Re'u v'goyim v'habitu v'hitamehu t'mahu. Shem says, the Navi says, look around the nations. Look around the nations and take a close look. V'hitamehu t'mahu. And as you look, you should wonder, look at how they are victorious. Look at how they trump up their successes. Kifoal poel bimechem lo ta'aminu ki yesupar. Because what you guys are going to see is something that's completely unbelievable. You won't believe it when I tell you what's going to happen here. Ki hineni mekim et hakasnim hagoy hamar vehanimar. God will arouse the Kasdim, which are a nation which is Mar and Nimar. Our sages say they are the embittered nation, and they are going to be quick to come and expand over the nations. The Kasdim are a nation that wasn't even worth counting. Hashem says, I'm going to take a nation that no one thought much of, no one thought much of the Kasdim, and suddenly they're going to be a world empire. I'm going to show you, you're going to see things in your day that no one would believe if you tell them in advance this is what's going to happen. I will arouse the Kasdim, this embittered nation that's quick to plunder. Which who will expand over the breadth of the land and inherit areas that are not his own. They will imperialize throughout the world. Ayom v'nora ahu, they are awesome, they are fearful. Mimenu mishpato us'eto yete, they will export their judges, they will export their rulers, and they will instill fear in the nations all around them. V'kalu minemerim susav, their horses will be lighter than leopards. They will leap forward and they will be swifter, lighter than leopards. V'chadu mize'ei ve'erev ufashu parashav. V'chadu, the Navi says, they will be sharper than the wolves of the night. Their capacity to bite, their capacity to destroy. The kastim themselves, they're going to be able to consume them and enemies swifter than the wolves of the night. The wolves at night are quick to devour their prey. The wolves spend all day waiting for the nighttime when they could attack. And then by the time the nighttime hits, they're very hungry. So they're very quick to use their sharp teeth and devour their prey. The Navi says, the kasdim will be sharper, their teeth will be sharper than the wolves of the night. Ufashu parashav, and his horsemen will number many. You see the play on words. Fashu and parashav. Fashu means there will be many. There will be tremendous in numbers. Ufarashav merachok yavohu. His horsemen will come from a distance. Ya'ufu kineshir chash lechol. They will fly forward like the eagle who is quick to come and eat its prey. Kulo lechamas yavohu megamat b'neihem kadima. They are coming to plunder this nation. It's as though their whole existence is about plundering others. And they're not fighting for honor. They're not fighting for anything other than plundering the others. Kulo lechamas yavo. Their whole essence is about coming to plunder others. Megamat pinehim. Their focus is kadima, to the east. Their thoughts are consistently to go plunder and return to their land to the east. Meaning, sometimes you come, you imperialize, you figure it'll help your economy, you'll expand your territory. No. They destroy cities, and then they leave nothing behind. They plunder, destroy, and then go back home. Vayesof kachol shevi. And they gather captives like this, the sand by the sea. Meaning they're just interested in plundering the other nations. So they come in, they destroy the city, they destroy the territory they conquer, they take the people captive, and then they go back home. They don't leave anything there. It's a terrible nation. No one else did like this. At least you conquer a nation. Let them pay you taxes. Let them develop. Let them say you'll take their goods. But you leave them alive. Here, no. They come in. They plunder. They take everything. They take the people into captivity, sell them as slaves, and they go back home. And we'll pick up here, Bezalel Shem, next week.